The right way to start your day. This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
The extra rusher is coming in on the rush here. Young throws it quick. End zone shot. Picked off. McKinney kept the feet in bounds. So they get a 3rd and 12 here. He's going to do it again. Deep shot. That ball is pulled in. Christian Watson taking the top off. Toss, Dowdle, knifing through for the touchdown, and the Panthers take the lead on the road. Love on the move. Nothing downfield. Making the moves to the near side. Jordan Love, eyes up, arms waving, lofts it up there. Oh, that's picked nearly by Mike Jackson. It's dropped. It's Carolina ball regardless. Hold is down. The kick is up. Into the win. It is good. Fitzgerald delivers, and the Panthers, a 2-touchdown underdog, come into Lambeau and pull off the upset.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Offices One Call That's All Studios at The Avenue with Gabe Neitzel and Mark Chamora. Here's Jen Latta.
Running her mouth, she wants to ride it. She's trying to hide it. I'm cool as ever. She's too excited. Her man looked like he.
Packers completely squander an opportunity to stack success, to separate themselves in the NFC, to beat down an inferior opponent, a 2-score underdog at home. They turtled, they crapped down their leg in a 16-13 loss to the Panthers. It was infuriating, it was embarrassing, and it makes you feel stupid for saying that this team could be a Super Bowl contender after a win last week against the Steelers. There's nothing worse, guys, than wasted potential. I think this team has enough talent to compete with the top teams in the NFC. Now, I know, Gabe, you said that Philadelphia just goes out there and keeps collecting assets, keeps collecting weapons and whatnot. But when you squander opportunities, when you play with your food, which is something that Julian Edelman said yesterday in the halftime show, when you commit turnovers and costly penalties, when you're 1 of 5 in the red zone, when you don't tackle, when you miss field goals, it feels like you are squandering opportunities. And there's a part of me also, guys, that feels like they're not using the weapons they have. They're not using the ingredients they have to make the recipe good. It's just mid. Yesterday, Matt LaFleur, after the game, said, if we don't play our best, we're going to get beat. I disagree with you entirely, Matt LaFleur. That was a team you didn't have to play your best against. You could have played average. You could have played slightly above average, and you could have beaten the visiting Panthers. There are teams that you should be able to beat even when you don't have your best day, and that was one of them. So what does that say about Matt LaFleur and company to you, Chew?
He better right the ship, because a game like this it could derail a season, because everyone right now is going in there going, man, we lost one of our best weapons on offense. You know, you start to get into that mindset of woe is me, and then you get blown out by Philadelphia and this thing could go south. I don't think that'll happen. I think they'll figure it out, but I don't know. It's just, I thought this team was like, especially when it comes to home field advantage, like back in the day, we would show up and we know the game would be won before the game even started. We just had that intimidation type thing. And I thought they had that after the first two home games. They looked special. They don't look special anymore. They look kind of lost. It's like there's no flow. I'll take a word from you, Jen. It's not flowy at all. It just looks like a struggle. And good offenses should be flowy. Should be a rhyme and a reason. You should be able to kind of feel what the hell they're doing next. To me, it's just like they're picking plays out of a hat and running them.
Well, because they don't have no patience, flow. Chew. They don't have patience.
Well, that's
the book is out.
Yeah.
Well, the book is out, right? Like, it's like when all the receivers got hurt and everybody knew they could just play man-to-man against the Packers because nobody was going to separate back in the mid-2010s when Jordy got hurt and they had to have James Jones. Oh, he's playing man. Like, they can't separate. Right now, the book out on the Packers is play deep. First of all, you don't need right now, and I know Josh had a good game yesterday, but for the most part, you don't need to have that eighth man in the box to slow down their running game. The Packers have struggled running the football this season. So you kind of play a deep shell, keep everything in front of you. They're not going to – they'll take what you give them for a little bit, but eventually they're going to get impatient and try to push the ball down the field and not have what it takes to finish off that drive. And that's exactly what happened yesterday. The Panthers just, hey, go ahead, take all that underneath stuff, get in the red zone, you're going to screw up. And that's exactly what the Packers did.
Which is so weird because when they play two shell, it's man on man. You know? It's man on man combination blocking. Everyone's covered up. They were so good at it this year. And I mean, they're so good at it last year. This year they stink. You know, you want to get a team out of two shell or four shell, you run the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not happening. I mean, yes, Gabe, yesterday was better. But Carolina's rushing attack was better than Green Bay's.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
That's why they lost the game.
Dave from Aaron weighing in on the Carbless Talk and text line, 800-990-3776. Is LaFleur going to cost the Packers a championship? I don't understand his play calling. It's like he overthinks everything. Third and long, and we surprise him by throwing the ball behind the line of scrimmage. It seems boneheaded, and then there are the penalties. Meanwhile, John weighing in saying, I tend to be a sports optimist, but I woke up today feeling anything but. I've adamantly defended LaFleur for a long time, but today I cannot. And let's go out to the phone lines, 800-990-3776. Brandon in Tulsa waiting patiently on the line. Good morning, Brandon. What irritated you the most about the Packers' loss to the Panthers?
Good morning, everybody. I was at work, so I didn't get to watch the game live. I had to catch it afterwards. But I disagree with people who say that Matt's not a good play caller. I think he is a really good play caller. My question is kind of towards everybody, but Chewy, you played in the league. I'm sure you played with and against guys who were so talented that they could take some reps off during the week and not exactly prepare the best, but when it came Sunday, they're still going to show out. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, Sterling was one of them. Sterling, because he had that turf toe, never practiced, which aggravated Holmgren, but he'd show up every week and make plays. Yeah, there are guys like that.
I mean, and so I asked that because, Jen, you nailed it so well. It irritates me when Matt says things like, yeah, if we don't play our best, we're going to lose. That's baloney. He has so much talent infused in this team. You know, you can't say that. There are some players who, you're right, I'm not talented enough to take a rep off, so I've got to prepare like crazy if I'm going to block Reggie White or whatever. That is not the Packers team. They have tons of talent. They should be able to make boneheaded plays and say, we'll get them on the next series because we are that good. I genuinely wonder if Matt is so paranoid about showing his best stuff, because we know he's a paranoid coach. It irritates me so much in the offseason. Nope, you can't even – not only can you not come to the practice fans, but you can't know what color Gatorade we're drinking because it might cost me a game. I wonder if he hides some of his best stuff, play calls, whatever, against teams like the Panthers or the Browns, thinking, well, we might just be able to make it up and win anyway. And that's why the preparation isn't great for his team throughout the week and they go and lose these games. The urgency week in and week out to beat, no matter who they're playing, dictate the game. I've got the best roster. You're going to do things our way. He doesn't have that mindset. So when it comes to, like, LaFleur as a head coach, I don't think it's an issue because he's a bad play caller. I just don't know if he's got the right mindset to be a head coach. He's a great offensive mind, but being a head coach takes talent, and maybe he doesn't really have it to go all the way to win a title as a head coach.
Well, this is what I think, and I haven't done a deep dive into it, but early in the year, he's so good at scheming guys open. The problem is you can't do that all season long because there's only so many ways to scheme a guy open. And that's why I harp on, where are these bread and butter plays? You know, where's the slants? Why don't they run slants anymore? Is it because that they're too afraid that the safety's going to come downhill and they're going to get hurt? Slants used to be a bread and butter of ours because when you have speed like that, you can. Those are setup plays because, you know, you run three slants or two slants to Golden. You know what's coming? Sluggo. Slant go. Robert Brooks was one of the best slant runners I've ever seen. And there's no, like, I don't see plays where it's like you have four other plays off of it, right? I just don't see that. And that's how we schemed, right? We didn't put new plays in. We just did things different formationally to keep the defense off balance and not know it was coming. Now, we had a couple in there, but it's just bread and butter. I don't see bread and butter. I love bread and butter.
It would make a ton of sense if Matt LaFleur pulled one of his ridiculous game plans out of his hat like he's been known to do when everyone's thinking, well, there's no Tucker Kraft. The run game hasn't been going. How are they possibly going to win? And then they do, you know, the Dallas game or the Detroit game or the Chiefs game. Like, wouldn't that be the perfect situation to where we are right now?
And again, it just shows, like, remember early Matt LaFleur when Devontae would be out and they'd be fine? But
yes.
Like, who was the one guy they always loved to run jet sweeps to? And like when he missed games, like LaFleur was just
Ty
flummoxed.
Montgomery?
No. No, it was like, it was just random. He returned a couple of punts. He maybe lasted a half season. Like, seriously, like LaFleur was like flummoxed more when he couldn't have his jet sweep guy versus when Devontae Adams was out. Mm-hmm. Like in 19 and 20. It was just dumbfounding. It was unbelievable. But yeah, I mean, Tucker Kraft too still haven't officially been ruled out yet, but we're all just holding our breath thinking that's what's going to happen. Yeah, it would not shock me that all of a sudden Matt LaFleur pulls out a ridiculous game plan out of his hat for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Well, that's the hope, gang. That's the hope. 800-990-3776, taking your reaction all morning long to the Packers' loss to the Panthers yesterday. Let us know what you have to say. I do think this is interesting. Matt LaFleur is taking heat, and rightfully so. But I think some of this culture issue is on Goody, who wants to perpetually be one of the youngest teams in the league. Veterans offer a steady hand and experience that helps you prepare to soundly beat your lesser opponents, that from Jaws in Milwaukee. On that note, we'll be right back after this.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
I have told you how many times.
I know.
Do not mess with electricity, Chew.
And I don't. I did. I did. But
there was
an
incident?
There was one.
Plumbing, you're going to get wet. Electricity, you're going to die.
On 94.5 ESPN.
Joshy put it on the Infinity Exteriors Twitter poll. Should Matt LaFleur be on the hot seat following the Packers' loss to the Panthers? Right now, 66% of people are saying yes, he should be on the hot seat. So let's talk about it here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. It's sponsored by BetterHelp. Mental health is health. Visit BetterHelp.com/timeout for 10% off your first month of therapy. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. I'm going to pose the poll question to you, Gabe Neitzel. Should Matt LaFleur be on the hot seat following the Packers' loss to the Panthers?
Hasn't he been on the hot seat? I mean, I feel like he's been on the hot seat since the president of the organization said he wasn't giving him a contract extension. I don't know how the seat gets any hotter than that. Like, the guy who's in charge of making the decision whether or not that you are going to continue as the head coach said, I don't want to do lame ducks, but also, you got 2 years left on your deal, go out there and coach. So, I feel like he's been on the hot seat pretty much the entire year.
What does he have to do in order to get an extension? Because, I mean, you are rolling the dice if you let him go into a lame duck year, because there's a chance he might be like, all right, I'm just going to wait it out and I'll be a free agent coach.
So
what does he have to do?
I think the scenarios are as follows, Chew. I think if he misses the playoffs, he's gone. I think if they make the playoffs as a wild card and lose in the first round, he gets the one-year extension Jason's been talking to us ever since this happened. Mm-hmm. If they win the division and get to the divisional round or NFC Championship game or beyond, then he's getting a full-blown contract extension, because that's taking a full step forward. Because that's the crazy part. After everything else that happened yesterday, they're still first place in the division.
No, I know. Yeah, because Lions crapped on their legs, too. That's why there's no pan. I mean, if...
Go ahead, you can say it, Chew. If there's no panic, there's no panic. But I'm worried that some of these issues that show up against these lesser opponents will also show up against the top-tier opponents. But again, the what we've seen, the pattern here is that the Packers play down to their competition or play up to their competition. Mm-hmm. You know, you got a big game, Sunday Night Football against Aaron Rodgers in Philadelphia. Jordan Love puts together a hell of a half of football. You know, it's there. We've seen it. We know he can do it. We know this team can move the chains, score touchdowns, win games.
What did he say? We played it a little earlier that I can't remember when he was talking about.
We knew what they were going to do.
We knew what they were going to do. Like, what the hell is that? If you knew what they were going to do, why didn't you prevent it from happening?
Well, we didn't even get into
or
the trap
just
game.
Play,
the whole
or,
trap yeah. game thing.
Or just play into it. Oh, okay, if they're going to do this, then I'm going to do this.
Like, trap game? This is the worst trap game in the history of the NFL. You were at home, 13.5 point now. You know, I lost a couple of games. Well, a game when we were 14-point favorite, but that was against a pretty good team. Carolina's bad, man. They threw for 100 yards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They threw for 100 yards.
Mm-hmm.
It's the talent is there. He's just not reaching between the ears. You know, it's like if you're moping and you're going to practice during training camp, good chance you're going to have a pretty crappy practice. And that's on him to fight that off. I'd just like to know how he approaches a week like this where, I mean, this game from a coaching standpoint would scare the hell out of me more than the Philadelphia Eagles, because you know what you're going to get from the Eagles. You think you know what you're going to get from Carolina, and then it blows up in your face.
We'll take a break here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Rob Domofsky coming up next. Stick around.
A weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a fan favorite and Bucks legend. Tune into Hear District. Marcus Johnson, a Bucks Plus audio production. Marcus and his son Chris, a 1995 UCLA hoops champ. Talk about everything happening in the Bucks world. And are joined by some of the biggest names in basketball. Plus, they answer some of your questions as well. Stay out of the beat of the Bucks. Find Hear District now at Bucks.com/plus, the Bucks app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Josh, I love the intros, but man, that one was, that's last year's intro.
ESPN's number one source for green and gold information.
Oh, yeah.
Once again, Rob.
He's cracking the lip.
We did this last time. You have to speak on the show for me to give you an intro.
No, you're right.
Our most musically inclined and bald guest.
I feel like a jerk. I really do. Like, that was terrible.
It's Rob Domofsky on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Always valuable to get the perspective of Rob Domofsky after a Green Bay Packers game, but especially after a Green Bay Packers loss. Good morning, Rob. How are you doing today?
I'm all right, Jen. How are you?
Oh, we're frustrated. We're irritated. We're embarrassed. Feel stupid for saying that this was a Super Bowl team after the second half of the seriously, you know, you sit there and see.
I know.
And I think, to be honest with you, that is what is hanging over my head the most is you see flashes from this team, man. You see them put it all together and you go, holy hell. Wow. They really are something. And then they underperform the way that they did yesterday. And you go, what the heck? So I'll ask you that question, Rob. What the heck?
What the heck? Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know that I've ever seen a game where they don't punt and only score 13 points. That's bizarre. I don't understand the 4th-and-8 play at all. And I'm sure you guys have talked about that ad nauseum. I don't understand.
We actually haven't addressed the 4th-and-8 play all that much. We should talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean,
you're stupid. There, we addressed it.
Yeah. Good call, Gabe. And then the interception that Jordan Love threw, and his answer was completely convoluted. He said, essentially said, well, it was just like a punt return. Well, if you punt on first down, yeah, okay, it was first down. I get the idea that you take a deep shot on, you know, third down or fourth down and throw it 50 yards down the field and it gets picked off. Yeah, sure, it's like a punt return. This was not like that. So there's just so many things that happened yesterday that you shake your head at and you say exactly what you said, Jen. How the heck did we think this was a Super Bowl team? Now, watch, they'll come out next week and steamroll the Eagles and, you know, we'll be back on their side, but it sure doesn't seem like it right now.
Rob, does LaFleur at times, when he should cut it loose, he's too conservative, and when he should be conservative, he cuts it loose?
Yeah, I think you see a little bit of that, Chewy. I also wonder this. Like, we're in, what, year 7 of the Matt LaFleur time? Like, has Matt LaFleur's offense evolved enough to keep defenses off, off their scent? You know, like, we saw the first couple of years, they schemed guys open left and right. I mean, it just, you know, I'm not so sure I see that now. I mean, there's a lot of tough contested catches, a lot of tight windows. You might know the X's and O's better than I in that situation, but it just doesn't seem like the offense has taken itself to a different level. I don't even see a next level because it was really high. But you can't just tear off the sticker on the folder and change the date and go with the same type of game plan and scheme. So
You know, we saw a little bit of that towards the end of the Mike McCarthy era, where the offense just really didn't evolve at all. And I wonder if that's possibly what's happening here.
Is part of it too, Rob, because last year they changed the way they ran the football to better accommodate Josh Jacobs. Have they just not been able to adjust to be able to marry what they want to do in the LaFleur system, in that pass game, the way everything kind of marries together with the outside zone scheme of this style of offense the way that Josh Jacobs runs the football most efficiently?
Yeah, because they're still running it pretty right. Or at least yesterday they ran it pretty effectively. I mean, what was Jacobs? Over 5 yards a carry, yeah. I think, yesterday. So it's a good point, Gabe. Something's just off, right? Like, I mean, they're, when something's off like that, you can't make mistakes with decisions on going for it. You can't make mistakes on turning the ball over. You can still win if things are a little off kilter, but not when you do the other stuff and then throw in, some injuries. And I want to go back to that 4th and 8 thing too, Gabe. Like, they, at that point, do you know what their skill guys were on the field at that point? It was Malik.
So Malik Heath, because he couldn't line up properly, and they had to burn the timeout. Yep. Savion Williams and Romeo Doubs.
Correct.
And then was Musgrave the tight end?
No, it was Don Fitzpatrick.
Oh.
And I think Emmanuel Wilson, maybe Jacobs was the back on that. I'm not sure. But, like, that you have to take that into account, right? Like, you have to take into account not only the down distance, time, and score, but who you have there. I think that was another aspect of that mistake.
Does LaFleur have any sort of principles that he lives by in terms of going for it on fourth down? Because the teams that are aggressive and do it all the time, it seems like, just using the Lions, for example, because they're a team in the division that go for fourth down more often than not, but it seems like they have a plan of, hey, if it's fourth down in this part of the field, this distance, we're going to go for it. Does LaFleur have any of that? Because it just feels like he's flipping a coin in his mind whether or not he's going to go for it or not.
Yeah, he has said many times when we've asked him about that stuff that he goes by his gut. It's a gut decision. So clearly the answer would be no. He does not have a specific set of guidelines. If he were a basketball coach, would he always foul up three with under 10 seconds to go? It sure doesn't seem like that's the way they operate.
So is there anybody on the staff that maybe can suggest that his gut instinct is very similar to that of George Costanza's, and maybe when he has that gut instinct, he should go with the opposite?
If he normally orders tuna salad on toast, he should order chicken salad on toast.
Rob, is he a micromanager? Does he let his assistant? Because there hasn't been an offensive assistant that has gotten a sniff outside of Hackett, who we all know about. For a head coaching job, Mike would lean so heavily on Andy Reid, Mooch, even Marty, because the two coached together for so long.
Right.
To me, is it my way or the highway, and I don't really want to – or does he – you think he consults with – I don't know what kind of coach Stenovich is.
Yeah. No, it's a good question. Stenovich did get some interviews, right? He had he interviewed for the Bears job, if I'm not mistaken, and also interviewed for some play calling coordinator positions, but you're right. I mean, for a team that wins a lot, their guys aren't getting hired, but the same thing's happening on the scouting side too. Chewy, John Eric Sullivan's like the only scout that's gotten any GM interviews, and they've got a lot of guys up in that front office, Milt Hendrickson, John Wojciechowski, Matt Malaspina, and then John Eric Sullivan. Like, I mean, back in the day, those guys were all getting, Reggie
Snyder. McKenzie.
I wonder if the rest of the league doesn't look at these guys as sort of a trend-setting group. I hadn't thought of it that way, but you may be onto something there.
Rob, September 22nd, 2025, a gentleman by the name of Rob Domofsky wrote an article for ESPN.com that said, why Packers offensive struggles could be long-term concern.
Did I really?
How concerned should we be about the offensive line specifically, who did not have a good day yesterday? And I'm concerned that the health issues there and the penalty issues there are going to plague them for the long haul.
Yeah, there's something missing up front. I really think, Jen, it goes – I mean, we started to see it in the Philly playoff game where they were sort of dominated – up front, which is why they ended up, why Goody signed Aaron Banks, you know, in the first place was, I really believe, because of that game and the way they were pushed around on, you know, on the up front on the offensive side. And I haven't seen a whole lot of improvement. I still don't know if the Elgton Jenkins move was the right one. I mean, it seems like he's been okay at center, but maybe did you weaken two positions by moving one guy? I'm still not sold on that. And I'm not sold that they're going to stick with Elgton Jenkins long term if this doesn't get better. So I do think that, you know, it starts there. It's a cliche, but it definitely does. And maybe unlike the game planning stuff, I should just change the date on that article and rerun it again, because it sounds like I might have been onto something there. Blind squirrel finds a nut. Broken clocks right twice a day, I guess.
Rob, what's your gut tell you on Kraft? And if he is out for the year, you think they'll make a move to get a quality tight end in here?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I do, Chewy. I think all indications are it's a season ender ACL from everything I've heard. They were just waiting for the confirmation. The text I got was nothing confirmed yet. But, like, I mean, you know how it is. They know.
Yeah.
Very rarely does a guy who they think has an ACL tear go into an MRI and it's not an ACL tear, right? So I would be stunned if it's not. This is very minor transaction, but they did cut Ben Sims a couple weeks ago, and then he was claimed by the Vikings, coincidentally. So they lost their fourth tight end, I guess, who would now be their third. I don't know what's out there. I've looked at the cornerback market, and it's pretty scarce. I've not looked at the tight end market, but I don't know if there's anybody out there that they could bring in at this point. And maybe that, I don't even know what the practice squad, there's so many guys have come and gone. Do they still have Messiah Swinson on the practice squad? I'm not sure. He was with them in camp, but I think he would be the Messiah in name only.
Did I see there was a tweet out there yesterday talking about Njoku, right? And that was like far-fetched.
That seems like a pipe dream.
Yeah, seems like it. I would be stunned if they parted ways with him.
David Njoku reportedly unlikely to be traded. That according to BleacherReport.com yesterday.
I wouldn't trade him even if you're a bad team, you still got to keep good players at some point. You can't just keep starting over.
Rob, why do you think the Packers are not very good in the red zone?
Well, I mean, we can look at it yesterday. I don't know if there's one general reason, but Savion Williams' fumble, that just started the whole thing, right? Like, if they go in and score there, maybe the game takes on an entirely different tone and you're not chasing points. Let's say they score there and then Matt LaFleur doesn't have to make the terrible decision on fourth down. Was there a mail cart going there behind you, Gabe? It looks like somebody was delivering the mail behind you.
It looks like a gentleman there is collecting cardboard throughout the market hall. So,
okay. Gotcha. I haven't worked in an office in a long time, so I don't know what happens.
Get distracted.
Yeah, you just squirreled us there, Rob. Good grief.
Like, behind me, the market's closed. Sorry. What are we doing?
Sorry.
I actually got concerned but that there was somebody just like hanging out behind me.
Sorry, I didn't mean to freak you out. The thing is, like, maybe it must have been in front of you and the reflection was in front. Whatever. Anyway, I do think the Savion Williams fumble started a chain of events that caused them to make bad decisions and bad plays in the red zone, and then it ended up at the 1-for-5 where they were. I mean, they were 70% going into the game. They were in the top, I think they were in the top 10, maybe even top 5 in the league in red zone before yesterday. It was 70% conversion rate if I had read the ESPN stats and information game notes, right? So, it wasn't really a problem until it was a problem. And I do think it just got started bad and got worse.
Rob, we appreciate you hanging out with us. Have a great one, and we'll talk to you again pretty soon.
All right. Sounds good, guys. We'll be seeing you.
Good stuff from Rob Domofsky. He joins us each and every Monday. Again. Cut him off.
No, he's looking out for me. I appreciate it.
From the glass, behind the glass.
Look,
what kind of sneak attack are we talking about
here? I don't know. It's dark. It's dark in the market hall.
Joshy, can you save us, please?
Something's come from behind. I want to know.
I'll try my damnedest. Hey, it's been Milwaukee listeners. Josh Mosh here for my friends at Wanna Parlay. My daily favorite daily fantasy sports app with the absolute largest payouts on Parlay. I cashed a little $2 entry for $30 just this weekend. Tonight, I'm looking at George Pickens to score a touchdown, Javonte Williams over rushing yards, CeeDee Lamb's over rushing yards, and Marvin Harrison Jr. to have under 58.5 receiving yards. Here's what you should do. Download the Wanna Parlay app, click around it when you decide to upload money to play, and get into the action. Use promo code JGC for a 100% deposit match for up to $250. Download the Wanna Parlay app, use promo code JGC, and let's play the world's richest parlay today. You must be 18 years or older to play. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER today.
You are listening to Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Yes, that would have been much worse ended up happening.
Finally got the which would be worse and what would be better. Finally, yes. We figured it out.
You can't just be showing your junk on national TV.
It would have got a lot of clicks.
On 94.5 ESPN.
We have been asking you all morning long, what irritated you the most about the Packers' loss to the Panthers? So let's talk about it here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. It's sponsored by BetterHelp. Mental health is health. Visit BetterHelp.com/timeout. You'll get 10% off your first month of therapy at BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. I think for me, guys, it's the opportunity was there. You could have seized an opportunity to stack success, to build momentum, and the fact that you just let it go by the wayside, and now there's this expectation of like, we're going to regroup, we're going to regather, we're going to put our best stuff on, you know, the field on Monday night against Philadelphia. I guess I'm less than optimistic, too. I think that's the thing that's bothering me the most about the 16-13 loss.
You know what? The loss would have bothered me, but not as much if all indications point to losing Tucker Kraft, because that's a big void. That's a big void. Probably one of your definitely top four offensive players, you know, would love Jacobs. I'd probably even put him three. So that's going to hurt. Guys are going to have to step up. Musgrave's going to have to somehow fill that void. But that alone makes me feel like crap this morning.
Still no update, Gabe, right?
No.
You've been monitoring the social medias.
No, nothing on that. And it's just, it's going to have to be different because they're different players. Like Tucker Kraft has been so good at yards after the catch, and they're so good at getting him the ball near the line of scrimmage, in space, letting him do things. Luke Musgrave isn't that type of guy. He seems like more of a guy that can stretch it down the field. Right? Like he's got some speed to him, but it's better used down the field instead of getting the ball in his hands and letting him make somebody miss or run somebody over and get those yards after the catch. It seems like he has to get the ball away from the line of scrimmage in order to be most efficient.
He doesn't have the same feel as Kraft.
No.
And it is a feel. Mm-hmm. You know, it is a feel. So, I mean, the offense is going to have to pivot. It's going to have to pivot, but I'm going to tell you what, and they ran it better. They got to run it even better from here on out in order for this team to make a deep playoff run.
And
the other one, Jen, is like, you know, Golden, you can tell he's frustrated, right? He's frustrated. But the one long ball down the middle, you got to make that play, man.
I mean,
you got to make that play. Christian Watson made it. I mean, there was a defender right there. When it's your time to shine, you got to shine. So they need more out of him, too.
I mean, come on, man. There was a guy literally over the top of him and in front of him.
Also, Christian Watson was the same thing.
Christian Watson, 6'6". Those are two different guys you're asking to do the same exact thing.
I'm just saying, when it's your time to shine, you got to shine. Like Savion Williams. What the hell do you think was going to happen when they're holding you up and there's four guys coming in to hit you? What do you think? Little ball security. You know?
Yeah, and I told the guys, I was telling Gabe and Joshy this earlier, I actually really liked the balance of that drive. I really liked the way they were using the run, they were using the pass, and I felt like, okay, here's that rhythm we've been talking about. Here's that, you know, balanced offense we've been talking about. And then, of course, you had the Savion Williams issue, and that really took the wind out of the sails. We put it on the Jen, Gabe, and Chewy Infinity Exteriors poll. Do you think Matt LaFleur will prevent the Packers from winning a Super Bowl? 73% of people are saying yes right now. Now, again, some of that is an immediate reaction. Some of that is recency bias. Some of that is everybody's feeling crappy today about a 16-13 loss to the Panthers. Some of it is what Rob was saying, Matt LaFleur, you got to evolve, man. And you got to figure out a way to put your playmakers in positions to make plays. Gabe?
Yeah, but I mean, to Chewy's point, I guess I disagree on that specific Matthew Golden play. Like, if this team is that talented, you got to step up too. I'm not willing to place all of this at the feet of Matt LaFleur. Does he share a big chunk of it? Sure. But if you're actually that good, you can't do what you did yesterday. Like, if you're actually that good.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, most of the time when it comes down to play calls, you're as fans, we're not actually frustrated with the play call. We're frustrated with the execution of that play call. And this team doesn't execute enough. They just don't. I mean, so it's a combination of a lot of those wide receiver screens are unnecessary and not great. But also, like, when you get those opportunities, you do have to go out and execute. And they just don't.
Sounds like a, you're mad at your dad, not me. I forgive you. Wilkie and Towns is next on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee.